and welcome to Law Matters for another fortnight. Jodie Hoffman with you in the studio this hour. Thank you for tuning in. Shout out to our listeners listening in here on Noongar Boodja through 100.9 FM Noongar Radio. Also up in Kununurra through Warangarri Media, Derby through 6DBY, and also nationally through the National Indigenous Radio Service. This program is proudly brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Been on air since 2010, so our 15th year on air. Weren't with you last fortnight, but we're going to go to a song, and we're going to have a listen to Gina Williams and Guy Gauss, and then we're going to come back and let you know all about everything that's on the program today.
Chabala Kwabata Nada Woyan Woyera Workedala Chintakanango Durka Wadanakwa Bilya Nanyang Mood Bala Bala Dong Mo Nanyang Bucha Bala Dong Ningan Churich, Balich Cool Body Wardang Wage. Whoa, Nang Baladong, Nang Mordich Baladong, Nang Mordich Baladong, ya. Whoa, Nang Baladong, Nang Mordich Baladong, Nang Mordich Baladong, ya. Nanyang Mood Balad.
Nang Mordich Baladong, Nang Mordich Baladong, ya.
Ah, did you enjoy that? Murij Baladong Yok, Gina Williams and Guy Gauss kicking off Law Matters for another fortnight. Did that tune sound familiar to you? It did to me, taking us way back to Genesis and Illegal Alien. This is the Law Matters program, and I hope you can stay with us. In the second half of our program, we're going to go all the way to the north of our state, to Kununurra, to meet ALS lawyer Lucy Peel. We're going to be talking about access to justice in the remote community of Balgo. In-person court hearings in this remote community were suspended more than 18 months ago. What does that mean for somebody's access to justice when they can't actually attend court? Lucy will tell us a lot more. The Aboriginal Legal Service has written to the WA Attorney General, the Honourable Dr. Tony Booty, about this issue, and yeah, we're going to find out all about that and what needs to happen to redress that imbalance there as well. Also, I don't know much about guns myself. Perhaps you do. Perhaps you're a hunter and you need a firearm for your hunting. Well, there is a whole new Firearm Act that has replaced the old Firearms Act. Lots and lots of changes have been introduced, and a lot of parties in the recent months have expressed issues about it. Angela Crombie joins me in the studio to talk about the new act, what it involves, what you can do, what you can't do. Welcome to the program, Angela. How are you going?
Good, Joe. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
As I said, I don't know one thing about guns, you know, except Sideshow Alley at the Royal Show, maybe, you know, trying to win that fluffy toy. But you're the Senior Policy Officer of Governance. You're also a lawyer with the Aboriginal Legal Service based in Perth. Before we talk about firearms, let our listeners know a bit about yourself.
So I started out working as a lawyer with the Custody Notification Service, and I've sort of taken a different path. I do a bit more policy, governance stuff as well. So then the opportunity came up for us to, or ALS, to do a submission in relation to the Firearms Act.
Okay, so what does that involve? You know, you sit down, you do a submission. You know, the government wants to know what people's views are. There's so many different areas of the Firearms Act. What was the focus of the Aboriginal Legal Service submission?
So the community members started asking some questions. There was a little bit of misunderstanding about, you know, what it meant for people practically now that the new law had come in last year. So there was a little bit of misunderstanding around the community on whether or not they'd be able to keep firearms. And because those queries and were coming in, you know, we sort of made the decision. So my colleague and I from the civil unit, Olivia, made the decision to put a submission through to the standing committee. From my understanding, when the submissions closed, they'd received about 2,660 submissions from various parties across the state. And then ALS were invited to participate in a panel hearing. So the standing committee then had seven committee hearings, and they invited interested parties to those. They ranged from shooters, so sports shooters, agricultural shooters. The police were invited, people from the health field, conservation. So any person who sort of had interest in the new act and the implications of that. So ALS were invited to sit on that along with the other traditional owners, so Yamatji Malpa Aboriginal Corporation, and I think it was Jilba Land Management. So the three of us went to the standing committee to provide evidence. They're tabling a report. The final report's due out tomorrow.
Okay, so we were one of three bodies participating in the traditional owner panel hearing before the standing committee. It was on the 12th of September, so not that long ago. What was some of the talk that came out during that process? And can you describe for our listeners what it's actually like to be part of a committee like that? What do you do?
So it's very they asked a lot of questions. A lot of it was on point with what our submissions were. And to answer the question you asked earlier, sorry, Jodes, our submissions looked at practical instances that a lot of our clients were facing. We had quite a few case studies. They're all published. A lot of the submissions are published on the committee's website. But ours kind of looked at, you know, what it means for Aboriginal people exercising their traditional hunting rights, stuff like that. So a lot of it was around the implications with that and why, you know, our position under the new Act is, it's quite unclear on how we can have, you know, licences to be able to undertake those hunting obligations.
There's a whole lot of areas that have been looked at under the WA Firearms Act, and it could be anything from holding a club licence to a collector licence to a competition licence, firearms and acreage, training. But specifically, I guess the one that was most appropriate for our mob was the hunting one.
Yep.
And an individual licence for hunting, and the requirement for approval of land for hunting, all land that is intended for hunting must be in Western Australia and registered by the landowner occupier on the new online portal. And the registering of land can be done any time from March onwards this year, so that includes now. It must have been an interesting process, just, I mean, because I imagine that, you know, if you're not involved with guns in any way, it's like learning a new language, I'm sure.
100%. The only thing I think, I was comfortable with the law parts of it and reading it and doing that, but not actually practically understanding a lot of the firearms bits when they were talking quite, you know, on point about firearm calibers and stuff like that. I guess a lot of our focus was more on that, you know, the law parts of it. So, you know, how it's impacting our clients, how you know, it's quite detrimental because now it means that a lot of our community can't exercise those hunting for food and stuff like that. So we kind of covered it from that traditional side, as well as looking at how the new laws have, you know, directly impacted a lot of our clients.
So what happens with that information now? I mean, the Firearm Act has been changed?
Yep. So it changed last year, and then they opened it up for these sort of submissions, and it was referred back to the Standing Committee to sort of look at what's going on there. So when we went in through those panel hearings, they'd basically just ask questions to extract additional information to our submissions. So it's kind of a bit of a fact-finding investigation process for them. And then they go through, they'll do a final report that's then presented to the Legislative Council. And then, yeah, so like I said, it's released tomorrow, so hopefully there's some positive things that come out of that. But yeah, so we were one of many parties who, you know, put forward submissions, so it'll be very interesting to see what comes out of that.
My guest is Angela Crombie, lawyer and senior policy officer of governance at the Aboriginal Legal Service based in Perth, WA. It is quite a foreign process to get your head around if you're not in the legal sphere and you don't understand the process of what's happening with this. The law was changed and then they called for submissions.
Yes.
Now, can you explain the order of that?
So it was... There was another review of the Firearms Act a few years ago, so I think there was a Law Reform Commission authored a report back then about changing the Firearms Act. So we understand that the old one was quite outdated, so there's been moves to, you know, have it sort of move, you know, a lot more fluidly with the changes in society. And then it was put through last year, and it was just difficult around the provisioning of some of the areas of the law. So, for instance, the licensing parts of it. So because they've changed the new licensing structures to give quite, you know, a breadth of them, it's quite difficult now to satisfy certain parts in order to get those licenses. So the main one, under the old Act, people who wanted a firearm could get property letters from people who owned property, which gave them authorisation to shoot on their property. Under the new Act, now that person who owns that land has to have it registered, and then it can be capped on how many authorisations for that land.
Okay. So the hunting permission was previously known as a property letter or a written authority, and it was required to form part of your genuine reason to obtain a hunting licence. A hunting licence cannot be issued to a person unless they have been provided with hunting permission by a landowner who has registered their land for hunting, and the hunting permission is issued by the landowner via the new online portal and must be renewed when the hunting licence is due for renewal. The licence holder must seek permission each time they wish to go hunting on land they have a hunting permission for, and it is not an open invitation to go as and when they please. If the licence holder has only one hunting permission associated with their licence and it expires or is revoked by the landowner, they have 28 days to obtain a new one, or their licence will be suspended and firearms seized as their genuine reason no longer exists. How did that go down with community members, the changes to it?
So I think a lot of the queries that we started getting at the tail end of last year were around, well, where can I hunt? So previously, because we had, there was defences under other, we could hunt on Crown land, you could go to a reserve, there were instances like that. So it made that a bit unclear. I think now they've changed the process internally so that if people have native title, those body corporates, so the Aboriginal corporations now can provide the authorisation that you've just referred. Mm. So they can do that. But there's still a snapshot of community who aren't captured because of, native title. They're not part of native title or anything like that. So we're still, the submissions were made around sort of that space where everybody or each community Aboriginal person should be entitled to, nominate hunting as their genuine reason.
2,660 submissions were received by the Standing Committee for the Firearms Act 2024. So it's obviously a very important issue to many people here in Western Australia, hey?
Yeah. So I watched a few of the other panel hearings as well. There were concerns that were raised, various concerns across the board. Obviously, you've got your sports shooters attached with the clubs. You've got the agricultural shooters. So a lot of it was around, how do you humanely euthanise livestock? The health people I had raised. So the new act actually brought in stricter, more firm medical requirements as well, requiring GPs to provide authorisation that they think the person's fit to have a firearms licence. So the health professionals provided evidence to the committee for those parts. Conservation is a big one. So, vermin control on reserves, foxes, all of that kind of stuff. So they'd raise stuff like that. So it was a very, a massive breadth of, issues that each of the parties raised.
So I would encourage people to jump online and go to the WA government website, and if you just Google firearms current information sheets, there's a whole lot of categories. It's all been updated as of the end of August this year. So the changes as they have come in, Angela, are here to stay, is that correct? That there is a brand new Firearms Act and that's what it will stay as?
So at the moment, yes, pending what the report says tomorrow, hopefully.
Yep.
But if there's going to be any significant changes, I think, the media's been quite active in putting stuff out there. So I think, depending on the changes that happen, I think we'll see it in the news shortly.
And your views on it all, on being, part of the process and hearing those submissions and being part of the committee and reporting there?
Look, I'm just the law nerd, Jodes. I just like the law, so it's of interest to me because it's moving parts and it's the practical sort of applications on, you know, the right here and now.
Okay. Angela Crombie bringing us up to date with the new Firearms Act in Western Australia. Jump online, WA Government website, Firearms, current information sheets. It's very new, updated on the 29th of August, has so many different subcategories there that you can see what applies to you, and check that out. And thank you. Oh, Angela?
I have also just here, if anybody does have, where across the state, if anyone does have any issues with any of their licensing or any of the orders that come attached to that or cancellation notices, you can always give ALS a call, have a chat with one of our civil team, and they'll be happy to either, you know, provide you some legal advice or point you in the right direction and give you some information. So if you give them a call through on the 1-800-019-900, they'll be able to give you some advice if you need.
Awesome. And yeah, Civil and Human Rights Unit kept very busy with a whole range of inquiries, and it's good that this one is one that they're taking calls on as well. So that free call number again, 1-800-019-900, 1-800-019-900. This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Let's have a listen to some music right now. This is Moonlight Reggae.
Kaya. I'm Ken Kelly from Menang Budja. You're listening to 100.9 FM and Digital Noongar Radio Perth.
Shelley Morris and Strong Heart here on Law Matters, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Good to have your company. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour, and I hope you got some valuable information about our information about the new Firearms Act in Western Australia. And I would encourage you that to head to the WA Government website and see the changes that are in place. Just Google WA Government Firearms Act, Western Australia, and all the information will pop up in front of you. We're going to head right to the very north of the state, about, I don't know, 3,000 k's north of Perth right now, and say g'day to Lucy Peel, who is a lawyer with the Aboriginal Legal Service Kununurra office. Lucy, welcome to Law Matters. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Jodie. Thanks for having me.
Look, I'm glad that we're heading up that way, because there's a few really important issues to talk about, particularly in relation to in-person court sittings in the remote community of Balgo. But before we do that, Lucy, just for the benefit of our listeners, let us know a little bit about yourself and your history with the Aboriginal Legal Service.
I've been a lawyer for about 3 years now, and most of that time has been with the Aboriginal Legal Service. I was in the Kalgoorlie office for a year, and I've been up in the Kununurra office for just coming to about 2 years now.
Well, this program goes national, so paint a picture of life in Kununurra for our listeners.
Kununurra is great. It's a it's a small town. The population's about 4,000 or 5,000 ordinarily, I think, but it fluctuates in the seasons. And we're just coming into the wet season, which is exciting. We're starting to get some rain already. In terms of our work up here, a lot of the work is circuit work. So we're travelling out to Halls Creek, Warman, Colombaroo, Wyndham, a lot with a lot of our time. Yeah.
How far are you from the Northern Territory border?
Good question. I think it's about a 45-minute drive.
Is that all?
Very close.
Okay. All right. So how many people are working out of the Kununurra office?
We have four lawyers up here and one secretary, and at the moment we have two youth engagement program officers.
It's doing great stuff, that the youth engagement program just been introduced into Geraldton as well, which is exciting, but really kicking some goals there for community and clients who are accessing that service. So take our hats off to all the mob from the youth engagement program as well. Lucy, life in Kununurra, you mentioned that a lot of the work is circuit work. For those not in the know, what does that actually mean logistically in terms of leaving the door of the office one day and going on circuit? What does that mean?
So we have regular circuits, and every 2 weeks we go out to Halls Creek. And what that looks like is we'll hop on a plane with the magistrate, a couple of the court staff to run the court logistically, a prosecutor, a police prosecutor, and an ALS lawyer and a legal aid lawyer. And we get on the plane on the morning of court. We fly out to Halls Creek and set up in one of the multifunctional police stations. So they have a court built into the police station. And we just have a big list where we end up. It's usually a pretty big day. And for Halls Creek circuits, it's a 2 or 3 day circuit. So you also have a second day. You stay out in Halls Creek for a couple of nights and you have a day of trials and any other work that needs to be done. So for Halls Creek, in some places we fly. For some places like Wyndham, we drive and just do it in a day.
It's crazy, isn't it, when you think that you're sitting on a plane with the magistrate, with the prosecutor. It must be some interesting conversations happen.
There are, yeah. It's good being able to build a relationship with them, I think, in a lot of ways that you might not get in a city.
My guest is Lucy Peel, a lawyer with the Aboriginal Legal Service in the north, the very north of Western Australia, in Kununurra. Lucy, want to talk about the in-person court hearings in the remote community of Balgo. Now, these have been suspended for approximately 18 months. And all the hearings in Balgo have been conducted by video link to the Halls Creek Magistrates Court. What implications does this have for people required to appear in court? Can you explain a bit of the background to this for us?
Yeah, thanks, Jodie. So I think we're probably almost going on 2 years where we're court sittings in person, so meaning us flying out with the court to Balgo has been suspended. And in that time, courts been run ordinarily out of Halls Creek, and the police facilitate a video link from their station. And so Balgo clients generally rock up to the Balgo police station and appear from there, which isn't ideal in itself because it means that we're in Halls Creek, we're not in the same place as our clients, and the only way we can really contact them is if they have a phone, which a lot of our clients in Balgo don't have a phone, or if they do have a phone, it's maybe they don't keep their number for that long. So it can be quite difficult for us to get in contact with them. And understandably, the police are quite hesitant to... sometimes they're willing to use the station phone to let us speak to our clients, but that's not really anyone's preference, I don't think, because we can't guarantee confidentiality.
No.
So sometimes we just simply won't be able to speak to our clients on the day of court, and their matters will just be adjourned off to the next Balgo date in the hope that something changes and the issues kind of, like, the can's being kicked down the road. More recently, the police have, I understand, withdrawn support for facilitating that video link. So as of the last circuit on, I think, the 30th of September, they've kind of said that they're not going to facilitate that video link anymore. And so our understanding and what was indicated on that court date by the magistrate is that Balgo accused are going to have to travel to Halls Creek, which is just not practical. It's a 4-hour drive from Balgo to Halls Creek, and the road is pretty tenuous. I've heard a lot of stories of people's car being significantly damaged on that road, and it's also just a really remote road by anyone's standards. So it's not ideal to do an 8-hour round trip.
Well, it's not ideal for the clients and people who need to appear, or the ALS staff. I mean, Balgo is a remote Aboriginal community, for those who aren't aware. It's in the Western Desert region. And you said it's a 4-hour one-way trip, and you're going along the unsealed Tanami Road to Halls Creek, an 8-hour round trip. It's just not ideal as well. It's just not like going down to the corner shop and back again, is it?
That's right, yeah. And then if you're... if you're coming from Kununurra, it's even longer. It's 8 hours one way. So it's impractical to have lawyers driving out. Us and the Legal Aid Office up here have been trying to intermittently send a lawyer to Balgo when we have capacity. But it's a big drain on resources because it means taking a lawyer out of the office for a few days ordinarily to do the trip. And it's not ideal from a safety perspective. The options are really driving or flying, and if you fly, then you probably won't have a car there because it's there's not really any hire cars, so you'd be wandering around community, which is not ideal when it's hot. There's a few, I guess, concerns with that as well.
And look at just the whole access to justice. It really makes that unacceptable, I would imagine. 2025, I know that last month there was one of our lawyers flew into Balgo in advance of appearing for clients, appearing by video link to the Halls Creek Magistrates Court. And on her arrival in Balgo, the police were in the process of erecting a sign at the community hall advising that court had been cancelled. ALS wasn't provided with notice of the cancellation of the court. This is very difficult to deal with, isn't it?
It is, and you're right. It's an access to justice issue because it's already, for a lot of our clients out in Balgo, it's probably one of the most, remote regions that we up here service, and it's a pretty alien system for them anyway to have a magistrate who isn't really familiar with the area fly in and kind of determine justice, but having them not even be present, having them on the video is even stranger, and then having them just not be present at all provides major barriers in terms of understanding why you're in court and what's happening in court, in particular because a lot of our clients out there require an interpreter.
And the justice system is confusing enough as it is, let alone understanding charges that you're up against and making sure there is a full understanding of the law. It's already complex enough before you add in the other issues that is being faced by the community in Balgo. What do you think needs to happen? And how has the community dealt with, the fact that there has been no in-court sittings for almost 2 years in Balgo?
Well, from our perspective, what needs to happen is for the court to resume in-person sittings in Balgo. I think it's really the only way to ensure justice is kind of being served out there. It's just too difficult at this stage for us to ensure that our clients understand what's going on when we're from afar. And it also creates major barriers in terms of trials. Trials are being run from Halls Creek, so people are expected to travel to Halls Creek, and there's a lot of limitations there, so their trials are rarely proceeding. Really what needs to happen from our perspective is the court needs to resume sitting in Balgo, and I think that's a decision for Department of Justice, my understanding.
Yeah, Sally Oliver is the managing solicitor at the office that you're at, Lucy, in Kununurra, and she did speak to the ABC recently and said that the disruptions had resulted in numerous administrative adjournments, with matters being pushed into the future, which was unfair to the people who have been charged and unfair to the victims as well, and said the suspension of in-person court hearings meant that the clients had struggled to access legal advice and trials, and said another significant issue resulting from not having in-person hearings was the inability to have trials in Balgo. So it's really important that this issue is spoken publicly about, and as I mentioned, the Aboriginal Legal Service did write to the Attorney General, the Honourable Dr. Tony Booty, talking about the importance of this area being addressed. So let's hope that there are some changes for the positive in the future, hey?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, well, thank you for your time on the program today, Lucy Peel. And what's on the agenda for the rest of the day in Balgo, and what's the temperature doing up there before the wet season hits?
Oh, it's hot. It's in the high 30s, I think.
That's too hot. Okay, well, look, shout out to all the mob in the Kununurra region and out at Balgo as well, and we certainly hope that there's some improvement in the near future in terms of getting court hearings back in Balgo. Thanks for your time, Lucy.
Thanks, Jodie. Bye.
This is the Law Matters program, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Lucy Peel there joining us from Kununurra, with the high 30 degrees just before the wet season, and thinking of everyone in Balgo and hoping that that solution is on the way very, very soon.
It's time to bring back the language with Joe Collard.
Today we will look at forehead, head and hair. So for forehead, we say yimung. Yimung is spelled Y-I-M-O-O-N-G, yimung. Yimung is forehead. The next word is head. For head, we say kart, kart. Kart is spelled G-A-A-D, kart. The next word is hair. For hair, we say jawin, jawin. Jawin is spelled D-J-O-W-I-N-Y. Jawin is for the hair. And that was today's lesson.
This has been brought to you by Brudia in partnership with Noongar Radio.
Hi, this is Kate Sobrano and you're listening to 100.9 FM Noongar Radio.
Shit again, dislocated location. Same old what we living in Babylon we born, yet still new to it. Cooking up a storm, we not the ones doing it. Assertive in times of danger, gonna escape all of these concrete structures. Can't live life high under the eye of the vultures. Death comes once, life goes by. And all I want, I need to be living life so.
again. And all I want, I need, we live in life so easy.
Hi, this is Simone Clark and you're listening to Noongar Radio.
A long time ago, I experienced a broken heart. Have you experienced a broken heart? Choice I haven't the end, and I'm ready.
Yeah, the awesome Marindas and Ready to Love. Before that, Chicken Rendang by Kurilpa Reach. We're just about out of time on Law Matters for this fortnight, but thank you for your company. Thank you to my guests, Angela Crombie and Lucy Peel, both from the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. And just remember that if you do need legal assistance or advice, you can call the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA on a free call number in WA at 1800 019 900. 1800 019 900. From myself, Jodie Hoffman, thank you for your company. I look forward to it again in a fortnight's time. And to take us out on the program today, the great sound of Mitch Tambo and Great Southern Land.
Yeah.